Hey, good morning. Welcome to Your Turn with Mike Causey. This is Mike Causey. I'm glad to have you with us as always. And as nearly always, we're going to be following the money. And in this case, we're going to be following not gains, but maybe federal workers trying to hold on to what they've got. There are a great number, as you probably know, of proposals out there, some in legislative form, some still in the talking stage, that would have a major impact on federal workers, postal employees, their survivors and spouses, and retirees as well. And we're going to sort of cover that waterfront with three experts. Jessica Clement is the legislative director of the Federal Managers Association. She's going to be up first and sort of give us an overview of it. And then later on in the show, Steve Watkins, who is editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, a senior writer for the Federal Times, are going to come on and tell us what's happening on the Hill, how it's looking, give us some perspective. And we hope the show will inform you and not necessarily terrify you, because we're not in the business of hyping the news. But these, as they said at Pearl Harbor, this is not a drill. Times are getting tough. Jessica, are you with us?
I am here. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thank you for being on. Yeah, I know there's so much going on. You know, I was looking at, and I get your regular updates from Carl Gruss, which I assume that go only to members, correct?
It goes to our members, our friends in the federal community, the Hill staff we work with all the time. So Western Report has a pretty wide distribution.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting that you put this out. National Active and Retired Federal Employees has one. The various unions have one. And it seems to me this, if you're in the jurisdiction of one of these groups, this is all the more reason to join, because the heads up that your members get is amazing compared to what people who are in maybe the same job, same categories, are not finding out or have to go all over the place. And the same for NARF, National Active and Retired Federal Employees. They give active and retired workers a wonderful upside. One of the things they're leading off with a government executive story that says presidential hopeful would freeze federal salaries and reduce federal benefits, and talking about there's so many Republicans in the race. Tim Pawlenty, former governor, who's now one of the leading candidates, and they're saying that a government executive is reporting that he called for a federal pay freeze, reduction in benefits, and a shrinkage of the federal workforce. I wonder if he knows we're already in a federal pay freeze.
He probably doesn't. I have a feeling there's a lot of things about the federal government some of these presidential hopefuls are completely unaware of. What was alarming about Mr. Pawlenty's speech was that this was his opening bid for president. This wasn't in a campaign speech trying to drum up support. He said that he would freeze federal salaries, that government's bloated, that we need to reduce the size of the workforce in his opening bid for president. And that should get the attention of some of your listeners.
Well, that's it. That's an interesting point, because typically in your first shot out of the gate as a presidential candidate, you want to say what you stand for, but you want to get people's attention, and you kind of focus on the issue du jour. So I guess he's, like many people, has been reading the papers and seeing these front page stories in USA Today and other places which say that federal workers are overpaid any way you hack it.
Yeah, and he got our attention, didn't he?
He did, yes. Well, Jessica, when we were talking about you coming on the show, in fact, you inspired today's column, because the number one question that we're getting here at Federal News Radio, whether it's me or other reporters or people who are actually on the radio, but the number one question we get from people is, am I going to have time enough to retire this year before Congress lowers the boom, changes the retirement rules, and goes from a system whereby federal annuities, which are now based on the employee's highest three-year average salary, they would change that to a high-five system. And a couple of readers and listeners have done the math, because I'm incapable of that. and one of them said he would have to work another 6 months under the high-five to get the same annuity he is anticipating under the high-three system. Somebody else told me that they thought they would have to work another 18 months, and apparently it varies depending on your salary and your grade level and all that sort of thing. But I know this is a horrible prospect for people, but what's the real story with this?
Well, the fact that your readers are paying attention makes me feel warm and fuzzy. You know, they're listening to your column. They're hopefully going to FMA's website and reading our updates. They're paying attention, and that's good. And like you, most of the emails that come through my inbox from FMA members are, what about the high three to high five? Which is particularly interesting to me because in all the legislation out there and in all the talks and, you know, what's going on at the Blair House, really the only place that was ever mentioned was the Fiscal Commission's report, which came out in December. However, I think it's really telling that the active employees, this is what the active employees care most about. So what I tell people when they ask about the high three to high five, will it be retroactive? Will they phase it in? I said, you know, and I always tell them, I don't know. You know, I could give you my 2 cents on it. But the bottom line is, this is the least talked about provision in all the things that Congress and the administration could do to harm federal employees. I'm not saying it's not possible, but thus far from what we're hearing, that right now is at least, I don't want to say it's off the table, but it's getting less attention than some other things.
Well, it's sort of the Freddy Krueger monster out there in the woods. People are aware of it, but so far there's no there, huh?
Exactly. And even for the Fiscal Commission's report, they did their recommendation was prospective. It would change from high three to high five for all new federal employees. Didn't affect the active employees. So I constantly wonder, where some of the feds are getting their information from.
Well, that high three to high five has been around as long as I can remember,
right.
And that's a long time. And it seems to come up every year, and we have to be careful about the terminology. It is not a proposal as such from the Congressional Budget Office or the Congressional Research Service, but it's one of the options.
It's an option.
And they're charged by Congress to say, what could we do to save money? And they say, okay, eliminate the tax break for home mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is horrified. Real estate columnists write about it for 6 months. It never happens, and it goes away. That's been the story with the high three to the high five. But again, times are very different.
Times are really different, and I think it's excellent that people contacting you are paying attention, because there's a lot of things that are going on in this Congress that the administration's talking about that are really going to impact federal employees, and I'm glad to hear that they're paying attention.
You know, the one thing that's, I guess it's more real and is out there, and Steve Watkins and Steve Losi mentioned this last week on the show, as what they thought, and I'll see if it still feel that way, what they thought was the number one threat to feds right now as far as reality, and they said it was this change in the way the Consumer Price Index is figured and the way it's used to index inflation benefits for not only federal and postal retirees, but for people under Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something like the Chain Consumer Price Index. And I noticed the Washington Post on May 27th wrote a very unusual editorial endorsing this concept, saying it wouldn't hurt much, but it would increase in federal annuities and the increase in Social Security benefits every year.
That's really interesting. If you were to ask me that very same question,
mm-hmm.
my answer would be a change in the pension contributions.
Okay.
From what we're hearing, that is absolutely on the table. It's being discussed. You know, right now, CSRS folks pay 7% to the trust fund. FERS folks pay 0.8%, and the agencies are on the hook for much larger contributions than what the current employees pay. You know, a lot of people say, well, the agency matches my 7%, why should I have to pay more? Well, the agency doesn't just match your 7%, it pays actually several more percentage points higher than that. So when members of Congress, especially these freshman members, are looking at that, they're going, why is the agency paying so much more money than the employee? So I think what's realistic right now, and I certainly am not going to speculate as to an exact percentage, but I think we're going to see some of that burden shift from the agency to the employee.
And the proposal right now, as I understand it, is, and this would be FERS only, correct?
Well, I mean, I think everything's on the table.
Okay.
You know, I can only speak to the rumors we're hearing.
I want to ask you about the rumors. We need to take a short break here on WFED 1500 AM. Be right back.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high cost of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's QWEST.com/federal.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Do you struggle with sharing real-time information while protecting critical technology infrastructures? Do you want to learn how to meet the sophisticated threat landscape head-on? Then join your government IT, security, and management peers at the 2011 Symantec Government Symposium on June 14th. Hear from keynote speakers General Colin Powell and Department of Homeland Security Undersecretary Rand Beers. Share your own experiences and knowledge. Register today at www.symantec.com/symposium. That's www.symantec.com/symposium.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Lockheed Martin was the target of a cyber attack recently, and although the defense contractor and the Department of Homeland Security say the attack was stopped before any critical data was stolen, it's still a concern. The effort highlighted the fact that some hackers, including many who are working for foreign governments, set their sights on information that has the potential to be far more devastating than financial information. I'm J.J. Green.
Have you ever thought about going to Antarctica or flying over it? When the initial flight test took place for the A380 from Australia to Chile, the aircraft flew over the South Pole, and thanks to high-frequency data link coverage provided by Airink, the flight crew were never out of touch. Imagine being the only company in the world that provides critical communications coverage everywhere it's needed. Airink does. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Dave Zangrilli, partner at Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman in the Family Law Group. We'll be talking about prenuptial agreements. Listen in. The show is brought to you by OF&P, and you can find out more about our firm on the web at ofplaw.com. Listen to Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m.
How can government executives drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for tackling today's human capital challenges? Join OPM Director John Berry and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, July 11th. Register today for early bird rates, www.excelgov.com. www.excelgov.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Jessica Clement. She is the legislative director of the Federal Managers Association, which is just what it says. It is an association of people who are managers in the federal government, Defense Department, and all over the place. Jessica, you said before the break that you thought one of the greatest threats facing feds that is very possible and potentially imminent is this one where the people would be required to pay more for their retirement benefits. That is kick in. I think they wrote one proposal for the FERS people who now kick in 0.8% into the Civil Service Retirement Fund. They would be required to kick in 5.8%. Is that right?
Right. The Fiscal Commission report and the House budget, which passed a few months ago at this point in time, would really move it to half. So instead of paying 0.8, it's likely that FERS employees would be paying closer to 6.
Okay, and that would be a permanent. It's not a pay cut, but it would be a reduction in take home pay.
It is. It is. is absolutely a disguised pay cut. It's our talking, you know, is what FMA says when we're talking about shifting half of the burden to the federal employee, you know, to the employee.
And people go back and forth on this. When we originally reported it, we said it would be an increase for everybody, and then it came out, some group or other said, no, it will only be FERS employees, only being only 4 out of every 5 people on the payroll. But you say it's still up in the air?
I think that what goes on at the Blair House these days, you know, with President Biden leading the charge, is really anyone's guess. You know, we're told everything's on the table except for taxes. But it seems to be, you know, the rumors coming out of those discussions and then talks with the Hill staffers who work for the members of Congress, you know, who are at that table, say that really the only thing they can agree on is ending farm subsidy, agriculture subsidies, and changing the pensions for federal employees. This really seems to be some common ground with them. And I would urge, you know, your listeners to be paying attention and what's going on in that room.
Well, I thought it was telling, you know, we were mentioning earlier that when former Governor Tim Pawlenty made his opening bid for the presidency, he said he would freeze federal salaries and reduce benefits and cut the size of the workforce. And as you pointed out, when you come out running for president, your first time out, you want to make a major statement and something that you think will resonate with people. So obviously he thought that, or somebody in his campaign did. And I think just as interesting, the fact that Vice President Biden now is meeting at the Blair House. And if you're not familiar with D.C., the Blair House is the official state residence for people who are visiting the president. And it's right across the street from the White House. But they're meeting there now, and he's meeting with Senate and House leaders. It's a bipartisan group, and I think there are some members of the other members of the administration. But when he came out of the first set of talks, he specifically mentioned the FERS retirement program, and he seemed to be very knowledgeable about how it works. And normally a politician at that level doesn't get down into the weeds about federal benefits, much less pay. But clearly he had been briefed on it, and they were talking about it. So you think that's very serious, huh?
I am. You can't see me, but I'm nodding in agreement.
Okay.
And then the compounding this problem is that, you know, there are so many reports out there, whether they be misleading or not, many of them are, saying that defined contribution plans, you know, are going the way of the dodo. You know, only 40% of employers these days offer a defined contribution plan, which was exactly what, you know, that leg of the three-legged FERS stool is, you know, the government pension portion of it.
Right, and of course there is a plan to eliminate the defined benefit. That would be the civil service annuity for FERS people hired in the future. What do you think that would do to the government? It seems to me, and there's always a law of unintended consequences, but it seems to me that that would make government service even less attractive, and maybe not for a short-term stint, but as a career, as a retirement program, because it has one of the best retirement deals in America now, and you would basically eliminate it.
Well, I think what you'd see if that were to happen, there is standalone legislation out there that would end the defined benefit portion of FERS for all prospective, you know, for all new hires. I think what would happen, you know, when I ask our members, you know, this doesn't affect you, so, you know, what stance would you like FMA to take since it's only new members? And they said, so this would greatly hurt our recruitment and, our recruitment.
Yeah,
they say, you need to entice people to join federal service, because when they do, they know they could be making more money elsewhere, which is one of the reasons why the federal benefit, federal retirement benefits, at least to some, seem more generous. Now, I know of companies out there that offer much more generous retirement plans than the federal government. So I wouldn't say the federal government is the most generous. But sometimes, especially those in upper-level management, you know, when they take a job with the federal government, they know they could be making more money elsewhere, but they like the fact that they're serving the country. They're serving their country. And giving them generous retirement benefits is one way to entice people to federal service. I also think if you change the benefits for new hires, you're going to see exactly what you saw with the sick leave credit. Eventually, people are going to get so bothered by it that you're just going to change it back anyway.
Yeah, and not to split hairs, but various people are talking about it would hurt recruiting. I would think that it would hurt more retention, and that is, you know, a lot of people maybe coming in out of college want to work for the government. It's glamorous, as you said, to serve, whatnot. But at some point, maybe in their early 30s, when the horrible R word, retirement, rears its ugly head, mm-hmm. and somebody says, what are you going to do when you're 60? And they start thinking about it. And that's when I think the government would cease to be an attractive employer at all.
I think we should be alarmed even now that 25% of new hires leave federal service within 2 years of being hired. If we change the benefits on them, what's the increase going to be then? I think you're absolutely right. I think it will have an increase on retention as well, especially with exactly what we saw with the first sick leave credit, when the person sitting next to you has much different benefits than you do.
Got a question here, and I'm looking for it. Okay. Now, this is from Bob McCarthy. And he says, long-term reader, long-term writer, question, are we going back to the 6.2% contribution soon, or are we still at 4.2 for now? I wish they'd put it back to 6.2. So what he's talking about there was a temporary measure?
Right. I can't remember exactly when it was. I do believe it was the end of 2010 in order to give a tax break to the, you know, struggling American people, many mm-hmm. of whom are out of a job. They changed the Social Security contribution from 6.2% to 4.2%. So this is not just for federal employees in particular.
Right.
This was for everyone who contributes to Social Security, which much to the dismay of the federal employee groups, did not include the CSRS folks. So they did not see any tax break coming from this provision, while the FERS and the rest of the American people who contribute to Social Security did.
Yeah, that was one of the stranger things, a sleight of hand in accounting. And in order to give people more spendable income, they reduced the Social Security deduction slightly. And I
right.
never quite figured that out, and I'm not sure many people really noticed it.
Well, I mean, I certainly noticed
yeah.
it. It's going to do is put a bigger burden on the federal deficit, because that money has to be made up, and that's coming from general treasury funds.
Listen, now you worked on the Hill. Now you're a lobbyist and a legislative director for the Federal Managers Association. What are you going to do the rest of this week and next week?
I am doing my best to educate our members as to what's going on. You know, we really do, like your column says, try and separate the fact from the fiction, because we're getting the same questions that you get every other day. You know, should I retire now? What's going to happen? Are we going to a high five? And really, I mean, a lot of my day is spent on the phone with people trying to figure out what Congress is going to do next.
Listen, thank you so much for being on. I'll be calling you all next week to
thank
see what's
you for
going
having
on.
Me.
Thank you, Jessica Clement. We've got to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll talk with Steve Watkins and Steve Losey of the Federal Times right here on WFED 1500 AM.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. All without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today, because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
John Blum is the Deputy Administrator and Director of the Center for Medicare.
To reduce waste, fraud, and abuse is to correct the payment policies that encourage fraudsters to provide services. So, for example, we have historically paid for hospital beds and wheelchairs way inflated rates, and that has encouraged a lot of bad actors to come into the program, a lot of fraud. So it's the process of paying at market prevailing rates to ensure that we create the correct incentives.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth, Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, host Bill Bransford will be joined by Carol Bonacero, president of the Senior Executives Association, to discuss issues affecting the SES and SEA's upcoming conference. And now, Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Henry Sikowitz is the CIO for the Defense Information Systems Agency. He says the BRAC move to Fort Meade has led to a different type of consolidation.
The CIO now runs all of the printers inside the DISA complex as opposed to individual organizations running them. Every single printer inside the environment is networked as opposed to, in some cases, we had many standalone printers. We reduced the number of printers from almost 2,500 to approximately 1,000.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. And a reminder that all of our shows are archived on our homepage. So if you missed today's or part of today's or want to hear it again or want to hear a past show, you can do that by simply going to the pay and benefits section and click on an icon. I think it looks a lot like me, and that will take you to our archived shows. We spoke with Jessica Clement, legislative director of the Federal Managers Association, earlier, and got her sort of worldview about how are things going for federal workers. And now we go to the guys who really cover this in great depth, Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, Steve Losey, who's a senior writer for the Federal Times. Are you there?
Sure, Mike. Good
hey, thank you. Thank you for coming on again. So what, as the mayor of New York used to say, he'd walk down the street, he'd say, how am I doing? In this case, how are the feds doing?
Well, Mike, I'd say things, as it seems so often these days, not too good for federal employees. One thing that's kind of on my mind these days, when we were on last week, I was getting ready to go to a hearing on the size of the federal workforce and potential, quote-unquote, right-sizing the federal workforce. That hearing came last Thursday, and it was kind of eye-opening for me in one particular area. It was the first time, in my memory at least, that we've heard a union leader admit that the federal workforce should probably be cut. Bill Dugan, the president of the National Federation of Federal Employees and the president of the Federal Workers Alliance, a coalition of about 21 unions, said that we're probably going to see some cuts in the federal workforce, and it probably should happen. And he cautioned that if we are going to reduce the federal workforce, Congress shouldn't just expect the government to keep doing everything it's doing now with a, you know, 90% of what, or 85% or what have you, what they have now, because that's just a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for outsourcing more, more costs, less productivity. So what Bill Dugan was saying is, if we are going to cut the size of the federal workforce, Congress needs to roll back some of the government's mission and decide just what can we do without as a federal government duty.
Well, that's kind of tossing down the gauntlet, too, I guess, in a way, because they're saying, okay, we'll fire a third of the kitchen staff. Which meal do you not want to have from now on out?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Well, it seems to me we're going in different, very different directions here. The Suzanne Kubota, our internet editor, pointed out, today's column, the Agriculture Department is offering a buyout, and they're limited to three particular agencies within the Agriculture Department. And the day after that story appeared, Roscoe Bartlett of Maryland introduced legislation or took some move in the Congress, took some action that would expand two of those units and beef them up, primarily because one of them is in charge of eradicating the stink bug. You know, we get it down here. But it seems to me that this just shows how politicians are sometimes moving in opposite directions at the same time. The Obama administration came in and said, we need to have more stuff that's being done by the private sector, insourced, brought back into government or brought into government. Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, was an example. And yet now the same administration is talking about a reduction of 150,000.
Yeah, and it sort of kind of comes off as if, as the old saying, too many cooks in the kitchen. when you have these very divergent interests, we need to increase this agency. No, we need to shrink it. No, we need to hire more Border Patrol agents. But at the same time, we got to reduce the size of the federal workforce. Something's got to give. It's not a recipe for good management of the federal workforce, and it's not a recipe for good governance.
Well, Jessica Clements said that we were talking about the high on the fear threshold of federal workers based on questions we're getting, and I'm sure questions you're getting. People want to know if they're going to have time to retire this year before the high three formula is changed to the high five. And as Jessica pointed out, it hasn't even been introduced yet. It's probably one of the more obscure ideas out there compared to where others are in the scale of things. Would you agree with that?
I would, yeah. Like you and Jesse just said, it hasn't even been introduced, and the sausage making of Congress does take some time. So once it does get introduced, it'll be some time before it goes through. And then It's unclear, since it has been introduced, it's unclear how it would take effect, but I presume there would be some period before which it would take effect. But, yeah, so it's not like people are going to have to retire tomorrow to keep their high.
Sort of in terms of an asteroid striking the Earth, in this case, legislation that could really gobsmack federal workers and retirees, I think last week you guys pointed to a couple of things. One is the increasing the retirement contribution that would, whether it would apply to all federal workers or nearly all, is yet to be decided, but it is in... Apparently, it's in the House budget that has been approved, and it's part of the Biden group, the Blair House group, that's looking at government cuts. And there was another one that you said that was pretty scary, and I think that was the what do they call that? The Social Security, the Chain Consumer Price Index.
Right.
Would you explain that again?
Sure. Yeah. What that is, it's a different way of calculating the essentially the inflation for the purposes of cost of living, and you know, currently it's an extremely complex formula, and typically with a 2-year lag time between increases in a basket of products that are tracked by the Bureau of Labor Statistics to decide what is basically the cost of living and the cost of goods for people. What the chain CPI does, and there's a fair amount of agreement out there from all sides that the current CPI measurement of inflation tends to overstate the actual amount of inflation for people, that is the cost of living. And the reason it does that is because it doesn't account for the fact that people make choices. As the price of a commodity goes up, whether it's a food item I guess gas doesn't work in that case because there's not an alternative, but wherever there's an alternative, people will at some price point move to the alternative instead of keep paying that inflated price. So the actual cost of living doesn't necessarily go up with the increase in prices of commodities because people are going to go to a lower cost alternative.
Well, I've also heard the argument that market basket, and I've seen it from time to time. I think it changes from time to time, but it's got basic things in there, food and things you'd need, and including, I think, the cost of education and the cost of things like appliances. And if you're an ordinary person, whether you're working or retired, you don't buy a refrigerator every year. And as far as colleges go, and these are tough choices, but as you said, it might be the difference between Yale, Harvard, and community college. But there are certain choices. Have you seen numbers as to what the projected saving this change would be? So in other words, nobody would be cut, but retirees, if they would normally be expecting a 4.5% COLA next year, and I think that's probably very, very high, what would this change it to?
I can't say what it would what the chain CPI would be for next year. I haven't seen any figures on that. But essentially, the experts who have looked at it say that generally, on average, it tends to be about a 1.1 percentage point difference between the current CPI metric that's used and what the chain CPI would be. So, in other words, the chain CPI, if they were to switch to that, would reflect an approximately 1.1 percentage point difference. That is a decrease from the current metric used by the CPI. So, you know, in any given year, that doesn't really amount to a whole lot, but over time, because of compound interest, it certainly would. So there's a chart, and the Moment of Truth Project, people can go online and look that up, but it's a think tank out there that you know looks at government debt issues, but they have a white paper on this, which is where I got a lot of my information from. But basically, they looked at $1,000 indexed to both of these metrics. So it starts at $1,000 in the year 2000. By the year 2010. The chained CPU would be basically set at 1240, so 1240, whereas the CPI would be 1260, so a $20
sure.
difference basically.
Yeah, and as you point out, the compounding works both ways, and if projecting it out, they'd be getting considerably less over a period of time than they would have under the current system. Then we need to take a short break here. When we come back, I'd like to ask you what you guys are working on right now.
Sure.
Right back.
To defend our nation effectively, missile defense must be affordable, available, and reliable. Lockheed Martin's team for ground-based mid-course defense is the right team to meet this challenge. Our proven performance-based logistics capabilities have been refined on more than 50 programs and honored by 9 Secretary of Defense awards. Increasing confidence and readiness while reducing sustainment cost is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers. For ground-based mid-course defense, the Lockheed Martin team has the know-how for success, the people, the processes, the performance. Together, we have built strong government-industry partnerships, led the industry in performance-based logistics, and built systems that have achieved more than 50 intercepts in test and combat, assuring affordability, availability, and reliability for ground-based mid-course defense is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Too many leaks.
Quest Security Solutions will help you pinpoint the cracks in your defenses and keep your critical data from seeping out. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Agencies demand comprehensive IT solutions. Level 3 Communications delivers it. Agencies demand reliability for data center networking. Level 3 delivers it. Agencies demand a scalable network for high-performance websites. Level 3 delivers it. Agencies demand simple contracts. Level 3 delivers it on networks and WITS 3. To see why more than 200 federal agencies and divisions are partnering with Level 3 Communications, visit level3.com/federal.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
With vacation time just around the corner, Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center and switch your existing system at no cost and that great $18.95 rate. And Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Visit LTCFeds.com to find out who is eligible to apply with abbreviated underwriting. Long-term care is expensive and is not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the FeltZip offers a smart way to help protect your lifestyle and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Visit LTCFeds.com.
Don't miss the FPMI Human Capital Management Conference and Expo, June 13th through 16th in Tucson. After 22 years, FPMI's combined their Labor and Employee Relations Conference with their HR and EEO Conference to bring you one conference covering today's hot topics in the federal LR, ER, HR, and EEO fields. Over 70 sessions led by government leaders and industry experts. Join FPMI for 3 days of learning, networking, and exhibits. To register, visit FPMIconferences.com. That's FPMIConferences.com.
Plan now to attend a firm's July 12th scholarship fundraiser and sample wine and food pairings from South American vineyards under the skylights of the Carnegie Institution for Science Rotunda in Washington, D.C. A silent auction will benefit a firm's college scholarship endowments for technology students across the country. Bid on an array of unique items from a weekend in Las Vegas, a group wine dinner at the Capitol Grill, golf lessons, and dinner with Helen Thomas. Join the festivities on Tuesday, July 12th at 5:30 p.m. Register today at affirm.org.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, senior writer. And, gents, I'm looking at the front page today online, and got interesting stuff here. It said this House committee had slashed agency budgets by 14%. Is that everybody?
Well, that's that's the agriculture bill, spending bill. Obviously, that's a pretty steep cut, and the House is looking at overall a 3% cut in discretionary spending, which amounts to about $30 billion. So that's pretty steep, and basically, I think it's obviously the what shakes out in the end of Congress is going to depend heavily on what's happening with these talks that Vice President Biden is leading. extend the debt ceiling. Hopefully, we'll see some resolution of that in the next
month or two at the most. August 2nd is considered the deadline by everybody on those talks. So we all know that there's going to be heavy cuts coming, and I think it's just another indicator of that. But I wouldn't put too much into those numbers at this point. And even the House Appropriations Committee is very careful to say that, you know, these are all contingent on what happens in those talks.
Well, we know that the I guess the Agriculture Department got the word and offered a limited number of buyouts and early outs to its people in three agencies, sort of anticipating this. You have on your front page that the Postal Service has sent out 2,400 RIF notices. Who are they going to?
They are going to a variety of postmasters, administrators, managers, the folks who based some of the folks who were targeted in that cut that we've reported in the past, where the Postal Service was looking to shed 7,500 jobs, mostly in management administrative positions, both headquarters and out in the field offices. So the RIFs basically were sent to those who opted, who were essentially targeted for drawdowns, basically, who didn't accept the early retirements and the buyouts.
Yeah, and these are people, I guess the term is, these are people who do not touch the mail. These are not
right,
clerks
right.
or carriers.
Yes.
Administrative time. Yeah, okay. And on the question of buyouts, the Justice Department had a limited buyout earlier this year. Smithsonian, Federal Trade Commission, now Agriculture, have announced limited buyouts, very targeted buyouts. Would you hazard a guess, given the way the budget process is going, that most agencies are going to be having buyouts?
Well, I don't know if I can say most agencies, but I would not be surprised if that trend does continue. I mean, USDA had to resort to their buyouts and early retirements because of the cuts as part of the fiscal 2011 CR. And I mean, they were not alone. There were a lot of agencies that had programs cut, had lost money. So I think we're going to see more coming down the line. I think as the 2012 process comes along, there's a lot of people who are expecting further tight budgets, and people or agencies are taking these sorts of steps for hiring freezes and early outs and buyouts to avoid having to take more drastic measures such as furloughs and RIFs in the future. So, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more of these kinds of buyouts and early retirements over the next couple of months.
Interesting you mentioned furlough, because I know earlier this year there seemed to be a big push in Congress to set up a furlough system, and it looked, I think the most viable one, if you call it that, was a two-weeker that would be a total of 10 days, and it would be spread over 12 months. That seems to have gone away, doesn't it?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything. That was a bill by Mike Kaufman from Colorado, Republican, but I don't believe that went anywhere.
Yeah, I haven't heard any rumblings on the Hill on that front myself.
Yeah, there's so many things. You know, last week, thanks to you guys, I got a good scorecard column out of it. But you really do need, it's like going to the baseball game, you do need a scorecard to see all of the things that are happening and where they're at. So what's coming down the line?
Well, I think one thing that broke, I guess it was late last night, was this report from Senator Tom Coburn about the latest in a series of reports on federal employee salaries, kind of hitting the issue of are federal employees overpaid. This report takes a look at comparing federal salaries to gubernatorial salaries, and the big headline was something like 77,000 federal employees earn more than the governor in the state in which they work. But you dig in further into these numbers, and that isn't all that surprising, given that the vast majority of these people, about 18,000 doctors, physicians, and other medical officers, they're the ones who are the bulk of those who are earning more than their governors. And you go further down the list, it's and the people earning more than the governors are air traffic controllers, attorneys, engineers. And when you look at the fact that, you know,
most of these governors earn, you know, in the low 100,000s, some even less than 100,000, some a little bit more. But it's not really all that surprising to me that doctors and air traffic controllers and engineers are earning six-figure salaries, because that's less than what they often earn, at least for attorneys and doctors, often earn in the private sector. So this just seems to me to be the latest in a series of reports kind of trying to bang the drum of federal employee salaries, and we're going to see more action on federal salary issues in the next couple of months.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, the numbers we assume are absolutely factual, but they're misleading. I think Maya Angelou once said that facts aren't always the truth. And then when President Clinton came to Washington after being governor of Arkansas, I think the average federal worker in the Washington area then made considerably more than he did as governor of Arkansas. And you sort of think, well, okay, what does that mean exactly? And the fact that John Edwards, very successful lawyer in North Carolina, probably made more money in 1 year than any six governors put together. So,
yeah, I was more shocked by how low the pay for governors was.
Yeah.
That was the thing that stood out in this report for me. There's some governors out there. There's at Maine, I think that's the lowest paid state for governors. The governor there makes $70,000, but there's quite a few governors who make under $100,000, and I think that would probably surprise most people.
If you were into the conspiracy theory, you'd think they were doing this to keep average people and people with modest means from going into political office. You couldn't afford it. All right, so anything else? We've got about 1 minute to go here.
Well, I'm taking a look, trying to take a look at this FEHBP premium support issue. I've been talking to the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. They're concerned that this FEHBP premium support issue, which was floated last year as part of the White House's Deficit Reduction Commission, is going to come back down the pike. There's still no definite news from the Hill on attempting to revive this, but the effort to do something similar to Medicare was voted down in the Senate last week, and the New York congressional election was widely seen as a referendum on the idea to turn Medicare into this sort of a premium support plan. So NARF is concerned that now that it's kind of gone down for Medicare, that there could be an effort to kind of revive this and do it as for FEHBP.
Great. I got to speed you up, Steve, but the idea it would every year the government share would drop and the employee retiree share would increase. So,
that's right.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. We'll do this again next week. Remember, the show is archived, so if you want to hear it again or pass it on to a friend, do it. Otherwise, have a good week and stay cool.